You're listening to The Cultural Hall with your hosts, Richie T. Stedman and Ashley Garvey Smith. It's a show about Mormon stuff.
Nephi! Ella! Samuel! Do you stand to live righteously?
That's right, it's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode 37. We're going to be visiting with, well, let's be honest, this episode's going to be about porn.
It is.
The effects about porn.
Yes.
What it can do to your family, how you can avoid it. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be the first of a series, I guess, if we can call it like that. Like a mini series.
Oh, a mini series.
Right? We're like a network.
About porn, but to stay away from porn.
Yeah, not how, like,
and,
hey.
And the dangers of porn.
So you're more than welcome to send us if you have any sort of questions about it. There will be future episodes. You can send it to richie@theculturalhall.com. Or just go to theculturalhall.com and go to the contact us. Sorry, I was distracted. Anyway, so you wanted to, I always take the lead at the beginning of these, and I feel bad.
Well, no, I like that you take the lead because I'm more of a follower, but I like to, every once in a while, I like to take the lead. Every
so
once
please.
In a while. Okay, so.
Please, sheep.
We
take
were
the lead.
I know I am sometimes, but we were talking about awkward things that happen in like in classes, like Sunday school and Relief Society. And, like the teacher has this great idea. They plan this out. They think it's a great idea, and it mm-hmm. ends up not being a great idea.
Bombing. Give me an example.
Here's an example. So we...
This happened recently?
This happened fairly recently. Uh-huh. And the teacher is a great teacher. Great right. Sunday school teacher.
A real sweet spirit.
Well, and just a good person.
Okay.
Okay. So...
So you have to... But you have to... You realize that what you've just done is you have to say that because you're going to be critical. You have to go, well, they're really nice.
Bless her heart.
Exactly.
It's like when you say bless their heart and you're about to say something that's not very nice.
Yeah.
But the teacher had... We were talking about loving one another. And the teacher had the idea and... but this is how it went down. She said, I would like someone, she taught the lesson and then she said, now I would like someone to, volunteer because I am now going to wash your feet in this bowl of water while we all sing Love One Another to depict the love that Christ had for everyone.
Okay.
So, obviously now this was a female
sure.
teacher. So
sure.
Not very many men are going to volunteer to take their shoes off and have a woman wash their feet.
Oh, so this is Sunday school. This isn't
Relief
Society.
This was Sunday school.
Okay.
Wash their feet in a bowl of water.
Because men have the hairy feet.
Well, and just...
And are gross.
I mean, to have a married woman wash your feet in a bowl of water is...
That's some kind of love. That's what that is.
Isn't it? So, while everyone sings Love One Another.
Okay.
So, it was a very awkward moment.
Yes.
Until someone... finally raised his hand and said, I had a mission president explain to us that doing things like this and depicting things that the Savior did was maybe not appropriate for this type of forum.
Sure.
And
that mission president was correct, by the way.
Okay. So,
I may offer some validation to that mission president.
So it caused a lot of awkwardness in the meeting. We ended up the teacher did not wash anyone's feet.
Oh, boo.
We did not sing Love One Another. It was a very awkward transition to the end of the class, and that is what happened. So what's something that happened with you?
Wait, I'm not done with
okay,
this yet.
Okay, yeah, we can talk about it. Let's talk about it.
It's like anyone volunteer. Was it like that lull like in testimony meeting where you're waiting for anyone to say, oh, yeah, I'll go ahead and do it, and it's just crickets?
Nothing. No one. I mean, everyone was looking at each other like,
this is really
this
weird.
This is a little bit awkward.
Then finally, guy raises his hand and says, I don't think this is appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And I thought he handled it really well.
Sure.
Saying, I don't feel comfortable with this. And the teacher actually handled it well. And she's like, well, you know, I was just, this is the point I was trying to get across. But I understand if you guys are not comfortable with it.
Sure.
So.
And then it's just like.
Super awkward.
Who wants to say a prayer?
Let's
anybody?
Say the closing prayer.
Is that about how it went down?
That's exactly how it went down.
You know, I was thinking of kind of some just things that have gone terribly wrong. And the only one that really stuck out in my mind is when I was serving my mission. Mm-hmm. And I served in Cleveland, Ohio. And in this one particular ward, it was kind of like the inner city ward.
Yeah.
Right? It was a really difficult ward in that it was some of the richest people who had their homes up on Lake Erie and just, you know, gorgeous, big, yeah. beautiful homes. And then there were people who, you know, all the way downtown in their, you know, their home was 100 and some odd years old and it, you know, dilapidated and they couldn't barely afford to eat, mm-hmm. let alone pay the fare to ride the, you know, their essentially their tracks train or their commuter rail to get to church. They didn't have a car or anything like that.
Right.
And this guy, he was like the ward mission leader, I think. And he was also, I guess, one of the best friends of the missionaries. You know how there's, it, for anyone that served a mission, you know how there's always that family where you're like, yeah, the Smith family, they always are behind us.
Oh,
or,
yeah.
you know, the Swansons, we know we can always go there if we're starving. And so this was, I think, my first or second Sunday. It was certainly the first Sunday that he was teaching. And we sit down and we've got investigators there for like the first time in this ward for, I don't even know. People are like, what? There's investigators here? This is amazing.
Yeah.
How did you guys, are you guys miracle workers? And really we were just lucky because the missionaries before had done it. So we walk into the gospel principles, which mm-hmm. is the smaller class for people that are investigating the church.
Right.
And we sit down and, yeah, he must've been the ward mission leader because he was teaching the class. And he goes, today we're going to talk about the Holy Ghost. And we're like, oh, cool, awesome. This is the way that, you know, people are going to know, this individual is going to know whether or not the church is true. This is great. Can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and I kid you not, the next words out of his mouth were, in Mormon doctrine, it teaches us, and
oh,
he just starts,
in Mormon doctrine.
He just started, starts teaching us out of Mormon doctrine.
Which is... Bruce
McConkie's book. Which has, some would say, maybe some controversial things,
right.
or certainly a lot of I don't know how I would even phrase it, doctrines that kind of are explored. It's definitely deep. It's not something
right.
you should be teaching
in a gospel principles
class. And so rather than teaching, you know, hey, you know, the fruits of the Spirit, you know, sometimes people describe the Spirit as a burning in the bosom or, you know, a clearness of mind. He dives right into, you know, the Holy Ghost is a man. It is a spirit of a man. And if anyone says that it's a spirit of a woman, they're, you know, they're incorrect. The Holy Ghost is a spirit of a man who will one day receive a body. And so, you know, so he just dives into this huge, deep doctrine and everyone in the room is just like, why did we think that this was what we needed to talk about right now? You know, couldn't we just go and the fruits of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, you know, these
yeah.
kind of things.
So did anyone say anything? Did anyone?
Well, so we got about, I don't know, a page maybe into Mormon doctrine. And
yeah.
we're like, you know, that's true. But I think we need to start back to the fundamentals.
Right. Back up a little bit.
The fundamentals of the Holy Ghost. And he's like, well, I think it's really important that people know what they're getting into. We're like, yeah, but I think that, you know, we should probably slow this down a little bit. And it actually became fairly heated with this teacher and us. Not because we were trying to take over or anything like that, but he had obviously spent a great deal of time
right.
preparing this lesson and felt, you know, felt the Spirit in that it was something that he, you know, needed to teach. And it ended up that about 10 or 15 minutes into the class, he became so frustrated with us, the missionaries, and there was more than just me, myself and my companion.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple other sets of missionaries that he just got up and walked out and he said, all right, you guys teach it.
Really? So what do you do in that situation where, you know, a teacher in your case or mm-hmm. in the case I was talking about is doing something that might make people uncomfortable? I mean, they spent a lot of time preparing, were led by the Spirit.
Sure.
But it's going to make some people uncomfortable. Is that okay to step up and say, hey, I'm uncomfortable with this? Or do you...
You know, I think it depends. I feel like if you can do it in the right spirit, which I felt like
right.
we did, where... And even though we got mad, we then made sure after the meeting and once we had, you know, the investigator had kind of gone home, that we made a point to go over and to visit with this guy and say, you know what, here's why we did that.
Right.
I think that maybe the tendency for some people would be like, ah, you knucklehead, how could you think that washing somebody else's feet would be appropriate, you know, in the name of being funny or something like that.
Right.
Like, it seems like something I might do.
You would say, yeah.
Although I don't know that I'd use the term knucklehead.
Yeah, and maybe you shouldn't do that
but,
anyway.
I really think it's one of those things that you have to be so incredibly tender about because otherwise mm-hmm. you can offend people and then they're like, I'm not going back. I tried to teach a lesson.
Right.
And people didn't want the way I taught it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh,
difficult.
Oh, awkward moments. There's a lot of them in church sometimes.
Yeah. But I would have let her wash my feet, going back to that.
You would have?
I think so. I think I would have. I mean, because here's the thing. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was something that she really felt strongly about.
Right. And she probably did. I mean, she is a great teacher.
Right.
And she always has really great lessons. This was just a moment that made people feel uncomfortable.
But if it would have gone on too long, I would have just been like, sure, me, let's do it.
Really?
And because my feet aren't very hairy.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe that, yeah. Yeah. You have very pretty feet. So
yeah.
You would have,
they are. They're porcelain. I'll show you.
Are they?
They are.
Well, geez. Can't wait to see.
All right. But here we go. Coming back in the second and third block, we're going to be talking about pornography. It's the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
That's right. It is the second block of the Cultural Hall, and it's me, Richie T.
And Ashley Garvey Smith.
And joining here with us is Michael Gardner and John Gunter, and we're gonna dive into this. To give you an idea of kind of where this topic came from, we're talking about pornography. What it is, what we can do to combat it. But this is an email that came in to richie@theculturalhall.com, or this person went to theculturalhall.com and did the contact us. And I'll leave it anonymous for the sake of this. This person writes, I was hoping that you could do a podcast about porn or sex addiction within the church. I know that KSL, which is a TV station here in Utah, has an ongoing program called Out in the Light. And a person that they had interviewed on there was that when it was shown after conference a little over a year ago was Steve Croshaw. I didn't know his contact info, but maybe you could get in touch with KSL. He says, I personally struggle with that addiction, and bringing awareness to your listeners may help others find the help that they need. And so that's part of the issue. That's part of the reason why you guys are here today with us. Also, John, through kind of my day job, I received a press release about the organization, the Clean Services Foundation, or maybe it was from Citizens for the Family. You're associated with both.
With both, correct.
And I said, yep, this is a perfect fit. Mm-hmm. And so Michael Gardner, he's from LDS Family Services. He said we don't have to call him brother, though. We can just call him Michael. A brother may slip out every now and then. And then, again, just to reiterate, it's John Gunter, who's with CleanServicesFoundation.org and Citizens for Families. So let's start there. What is Citizens for Families, and what is CleanServicesFoundation.org?
Thank you. Citizens for Families is an organization that's been around about 8 years, really trying to help parents and communities understand pornography, or what's quote-unquote inappropriate for, we would say, a six-year-old.
Okay.
Pornography is such a flaky term. People don't understand what it is, really, because pornography to a 20-year-old is different than pornography to a 40-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to say, you're right, we're never going to come to a common ground on pornography, what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say inappropriate material for a six-year-old. What should my six-year-old boy or girl read or see? What's appropriate for them to see or not to see? Grocery stores, movies, flyers, etc. And that's kind of the approach we've taken, because if we do get in the pornography battle, everybody fights about what it is.
Sure.
And that's not the point.
And
we're not trying to
finding a resolution. That's not porn. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Anyone finding a solution here? Doesn't look like it.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's not the point. We didn't have any success saying, let's talk about pornography. We want to protect kids. So we fought about it. So we started saying inappropriate images for children. And that's kind of how the Citizens for Families came around, was to try to help educate people on what is appropriate for
So what
for
is
families.
Or what isn't appropriate for a six-year-old?
Well, there's a lot of things that legally are, or I guess illegally, in even grocery store shelves, because that's where your community standard is based, is in mm-hmm. the grocery store. Everybody goes to the grocery store. Not everybody goes to a bar or, adult entertainment,
mm-hmm.
but everybody goes to the grocery store. So if you go in and see what's listed or what's shown there, that's your community standard. You'll notice that a lot of the stores out there have covers
right,
on
sure.
them. The group that I work with, Citizens and Families, actually started that about 8 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And we're trying to do a little bit more because they're very easily moved, mm-hmm. I guess. And so we're trying to, it's just money, of course. And
is
so
this only in Utah, or are you trying to expand this into other states?
Good question. We actually have members all over the world.
Okay, great.
And so we're trying, it's, pornography is a global problem.
Absolutely.
Obviously. And so we're trying to use Utah kind of as the model state.
Okay.
To launch this, we have about 70% of the state that live in what's called the Child Safe Community Standard City, where the mayors and city councils have said, yeah, we need to protect our kids. We understand that there's bad information out there. Let's try to protect our kids.
But still 30% of Utah is communities that don't have that set up?
Well, I think it's just focus. I think it's not having the time to go after the other 30%.
Okay.
But we have the big cities, the major cities, you know, Salt Lake, Ogden, Provo, Orem, the major cities in the state that have signed
these
proclamations.
St. George, you're important too.
St. George is in as well. Yeah. St. George is listed too.
Cedar City
as well.
Too?
Yeah. Yes. But it's just focus getting mm-hmm. to every city. It's not easy to get a hold of them. It usually takes a city council meeting. They have to present it. The next one, they have to vote on it. You have to get in front of them sometimes. So it just takes time.
Okay.
More than anything. But we'll get 100% of them eventually.
Cool. So that's Citizens for Families.
Correct.
And then Clean Services Foundation. What's that?
And then the Clean Services Foundation, a year, 6, 8 months ago, whatever, I had the humbling experience to be voted in as the kind of the leader of the Citizens for Families, mainly because the founder is a little bit older and mm-hmm. her health is not as good as it could be.
Okay.
And so I've been in technology for about 20 years, and we know there's technology solutions out there. We didn't want to recreate the wheel, so we went out to try to find solutions that help combat this issue, whether it's on your iPad or...
So things like sensors,
things
and blocks.
Block.
Filters, appliances, and routers, depending upon mm-hmm. the need, because software is great, but you can get around it pretty easy.
Yeah.
Filters are great, but there's a lot of things out there that you can't get around necessarily. Pornographers are, that's all they do 24 hours a day is try to go after our kids and families, so they have the edge.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They don't have any rules, and they have a lot of money. So it's a challenge.
Well, and a lot of people say what drives the expansion of technology within the internet
has been pornography.
Right.
Yep, you're right.
You know, YouTube.
Yep.
Essentially, I mean, everyone's like, oh yeah, sure. So the people could share their own cute videos of their dog and their baby. That's not where the technology for YouTube came about.
And right. even CDs and videos came about because of pornography, really, if you look back at the history.
And if you go back even farther, yeah. all credit card transactions online were done first with pornography, so mm-hmm. they invented that technology. So it's
wow.
So who you're hearing right there is Michael Gardner, and you're with LDS Family Services. For someone who may not know what LDS Family Services is, tell us what that is.
Okay. LDS Family Services is a branch of the church that provides counseling generally for members of the church. It's part of the welfare program of the church, and we've got offices throughout the United States, Canada, Great Britain, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, South America, Central America, less in those other countries, mostly in the United States mm-hmm. and Canada and Great Britain. And what we do is we do a variety of counseling, mostly mental health counseling. I come from a mental health background. I have my doctorate in marriage and family therapy, and I've been doing counseling for about 25 years. And for the last 10 years, focusing specifically on helping people with pornography addiction or pornography problems or whatever we choose to call it, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of controversy over whether it's an addiction exactly or not. But helping people try to get out of that. And then also part of my background has been to develop a website for the church, combattingpornography.org, which is the official church's website on pornography or dealing with pornography problems. And so worked on that a couple years ago and got it launched. And we're just trying to, you know, continue to help people and not only help them after the fact, but try to raise awareness and keep people from going into it in the first place.
So, I mean, pornography certainly in the last few years, it seems, has just been huge. It's just been an explosion. It seems like every single general conference, you can't go two talks without having,
right.
you know, one of the brethren say, you know, even if their talk, it seems to be about, you know, pay your tithing. And pornography is
yeah.
terrible,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
Have family home evening. And did I mention this pornography
right.
thing is so terrible? I mean, there's this foundation, there's LDS Family Services, there's all these different entities to combat it. But how do you combat it?
I think there's, I mean, there's obviously a lot of ways that what John's doing with technology and you know, raising awareness and trying to prevent even exposure is one way. I think the other way is helping people understand what it is and what it can do to you if you start to look at it. You know, the church leaders have gotten right on that bandwagon by saying avoid it, it's dangerous, you know, it can be addictive. And
so let's talk about what it does to somebody. If somebody gets addicted to pornography, why is that a bad thing?
Well, let's go back even before addiction. Okay. When somebody looks at pornography is a very powerful, stimulating, you know, means. Mm-hmm. And so anybody that looks at pornography is going to experience some form of physiological change. Males maybe more so than females, because men are more visually oriented towards sex than women are.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, you're going to experience physiological changes. Usually those are good changes. I mean, you feel things that, you know, you might say, wow, I really like that feeling. Mm-hmm. And because of that, then you're drawn back to it. It's like, it's almost like a drug where you might, you know, try a drug and at first you get that euphoric feeling and then you want to try it again. And, you know, you keep getting it for a while and then pretty soon it starts to dull. And so with pornography, the same thing happens, and you tend to have to go look at new, novel kinds of pornography, and mm-hmm. so you tend to go into more harder core types of pornography.
So you become desensitized.
You become very desensitized. So physiologically, all of that's going on, and mm-hmm. then psychologically, there's a whole another side, especially, you know, most of the images in pornography are women, and mm-hmm. it's women being objectified, abused often. And so, you know, when men look at pornography, they start to normalize that and say, well, that's what women like, that's what women want, and that's how I'm going to treat women. Mm-hmm. And so it can easily transfer over into real life situations. So it's not just that the addiction to pornography and now I'm a slave to looking at pornography is a problem. I mean, that obviously is a problem, but it's what it does to relationships. It really damages relationships. It's pretty impossible for somebody to view pornography and not have that damage their relationships that they're in with members of both the same and opposite sex.
Mm-hmm.
What about people that would say, kind of go in the opposite angle, and obviously just for discussion's sake, not my personal belief, but people right. that say, you know what, my kids are going to end up seeing this anyway. Why are we trying to protect them? Why not worry about teaching them to make the choice to not view it, as opposed to eliminating the choice? The church teaches a lot about agency and about making your own choice. So how do we kind of come to terms with that?
It's a good question. Yeah, I think there's a couple schools of thought. One is that, you know, not everybody that looks at pornography is going to be addicted. Just as, you know, not everybody that goes into a bar and has a drink is going to become an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
But some will. And so the sure way to ensure that you don't become an alcoholic is to never drink.
Right.
And it's similar to pornography. For most people that view pornography or have seen pornography don't get addicted. But the few that do, you know, for them, it's that wonder drug. It's once they see it, they have a hard time putting it down. And so it's not that they may not have that ability to choose. Mm-hmm. It's that it's harder for some to avoid it once they've been exposed to it. So if they can avoid the initial exposure, then they're going to have a better chance of never becoming addicted.
I think another thing to remember is that the pornographers are coming after us. It's not like, oh, it was an accident, we accidentally saw something we shouldn't. The pornographers are going after us proactively to get our children, our families addicted. They want us to become addicted because it's money to them. Mm-hmm. We get addicted at a young age, they've got a lifelong customer.
Right.
And I think there's over 50,000 predators, sexual predators online at any time during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're talking a lot about addiction. How would, if I was listening to this and I go, oh, maybe I'm addicted.
Am I addicted? Right.
How do I know? Or...
Yeah.
You know, what's the difference
that's
between
a good
me
question.
Just enjoying it occasionally or
right.
addiction?
And I think from a religious standpoint, if we're speaking to primarily an LDS audience or a Christian audience, mm-hmm. you know, most would say, well, any use of pornography is going to be problematic because it creates a disconnect in not only my relationships with other people, but also my relationship with God, and it creates that barrier there.
Mm-hmm.
But still, there may be some that might view it occasionally that aren't addicted, and so I think it's important for people to kind of try to figure that out. And there's a lot of ways to do that, but typically what I do, I mean, the simplest approach is to say, okay, is your use of pornography creating problems in your life? Is it something that you have said, you know, you're going to stop doing and then haven't been able to stop doing? Mm-hmm. And is it something that's causing you personal distress and anguish in your life and the lives of the family members that you're involved with? Mm-hmm. And if you can answer yes to any of those, then it's pushing into that addiction range. And then there's some other ways we look into it more, you know, as far as frequency, duration, the types of pornography that somebody's looking at to really determine whether we might call it an addiction versus just, like you said, oh, it's occasional use and, you know, maybe it's a bad habit, but I could stop. I'm not addicted to it.
Okay.
Is there, just because I'm curious, is there a number, you mentioned frequency, like I'm looking at it every day. Is that an addiction? Is it, I'm looking at it a couple of times a week. Is there that kind of gauge where mm-hmm. you'd go?
It could be, but that also can vary depending on the person. Now, if you were LDS and you said, yeah, I'm looking at it every day, I would say that's a problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you were, you know, not necessarily LDS and didn't have any religious views against pornography and you might look at something and then put it down, I would consider that still a problem, but they may not. So you have to look at it in the context of the individual's life. But I think if somebody's viewing it daily, it's going to start to raise some red flags for me as a clinician to say, mm-hmm. okay, what purpose is that filling in your life? You know, why are you doing that as opposed to out at the gym or out with your friends or out with a date or something like that? And so I would start to look at what role is that pornography filling.
So if it's affecting your life, affecting the things that you do, if you're staying home when you should be doing other things.
Right.
Okay.
And most of the time, I mean, it's important to consider that even though there's a lure of pornography just based on its own because it's sexual and we're all sexual beings, there's that piece.
I mean, there's very much that part where God wanted the female body to be attractive.
Right.
And then he kind of messed up with the male body because we're not so good looking. but the female body, certainly, he's like, you know, let's make it this way.
And so there's that natural appeal. But mm-hmm. often what we find with people that kind of cross into that addictive range is they're using pornography to soothe some other emotional need. They're using it to meet something that's missing in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, again, kind of back to what Ashley said. That's, you know, how's it affecting their life? And it's usually affecting it in a negative way because they're using that instead of other, you know, healthy coping strategies. Okay. And then that's where they start using it more and more and more and go to more extreme things because it stops having the same effect on them.
So coming back, I want to talk about maybe some signs. I'm sure that there may be some people who are listening to this that go, you know what, I wonder, you know, my husband. My wife had a problem with this. You know, some signs that people can look for. And then also I want to talk about cure. I want to talk about some steps. I know that there's some step programs out there. I want to talk about what the LDS Church does as far as that goes. That'll all be back in the third block here of the Cultural Hall.
Thanksgiving Point presents Follow His Light to celebrate their newest garden exhibit, Light of the World. Open Friday, May 11th through Saturday, June 16th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. with special activities on Mother's Day. More information at thanksgivingpoint.org.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
All right, it's the third block of the Cultural Hall, and as she always does,
I do it all the time.
We turn the microphone off, we stop recording, and Ashley will be like, "Hey, so I've kind of had a controversy," and it's a really interesting question that I don't know why you can't just go. I'm going for it. Let's ask it while the microphone is on.
I know.
So before we get into some signs, maybe that someone you know might be addicted or have a problem with pornography and some of the cures, let's talk about your question and get right into it.
We'll start with a personal experience. I subscribe to a specific fitness magazine. I know. Oh, so anyway, I'm not going to say the magazine's name, but
Which one is it? No, I'm just kidding.
It's a fitness magazine, and it has a lot of great articles in it. But usually on the cover there is a woman in a bikini. The most recent cover was a woman who was nude, but she had everything she's an actress, a really well-known actress, had everything covered, and you know, with the way she was sitting, but she did not have any clothes on. And most of these magazines are women in very skimpy bikinis and to show off their bodies.
You're afraid of saying Shape magazine, but it's
okay,
Shape magazine.
It's Shape magazine. All right, it's Shape
so
magazine.
Now you can all go check it out.
Now everyone can go see what she's talking about.
So I read this magazine, and I had this magazine sitting on my baker's rack, and I have a 3-year-old son, and he's just three. I mean, he doesn't know anything, and he just kind of like looked over, and he was like looking at the magazine with this woman in a bikini, and he's just kind of looking at it. And my husband was like, "We cannot have those magazines out where he is going to see them." And I honestly didn't even think about it. I really didn't. And I know that there's a lot of controversy in the church of what is considered pornography and what is not, because a lot of us have movies that are out that might have like scantily clad women on the covers of the DVDs or magazines that we have, books. Where do we draw that line?
Well, it's a great question, Ashley, and it's a difficult one to answer. My personal views, and that's, I can't, you know, even though I work for the church, I can't speak for the church. I can kind of just speak for myself and professionally, but.
Which is code for what he's about to say is not the view of the church, right, everyone. So before anyone writes us a letter and gets all up in arms, it's Michael Gardner's opinion right here.
And we won't be giving email addresses, so don't write me, write Richie.
Yes.
What I was going to say is there may be covers of magazines that are what I might consider inappropriate or others might consider inappropriate, but that does not necessarily make them pornography.
Right.
Because it gets back to that definition of what is pornography and how do you define it. I mean, pornography is material that is produced to stimulate someone sexually for sexual, you know, arousal. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the cover of Shape magazine had that intention. Now, they might have thought, you know, let's make it on the edge so we can get some focus and maybe get more people to buy it. But that doesn't make it pornography. We had a similar experience a couple years ago. I was contacted by the art department at BYU, the museum curator, who they had received a complaint because they had a painting of Sacagawea, who was topless in the BYU Art Museum. And
people obviously also remember, too, when I think David or one of the statues was to be able to visit Provo.
Right. And there have been several. There have been several, you know, top shots of, you know, bare breasts and things. And so the museum curators obviously saw this as art, but some patrons complained and said, this is pornography. And so they brought their laptop up and they showed me about 20 or 30 pictures. And we had this discussion and kind of came away from it, you know, saying, you know, these pictures may not be appropriate for everyone, but it's certainly not pornography.
Right.
It is
art.
But it may not be appropriate for all people. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, for some people, you know, the JCPenney catalog is pornography. And so it just depends what's going on in that person's mind and how they're using it that could make it pornography.
So if I have a Shape magazine laying around with a woman in a bikini, is that a bad thing to have around with kids in the house? And you can maybe answer that, because
I think, as Michael Gardner said, I think it's really depending upon the child, but why would you want to open that door?
Right.
Just in case. I mean, let's wait. Let's allow them to be kids.
Right.
That's not a kid magazine. Mm-hmm. That was not intended for kids to see or read or see the pictures.
Right.
So we're trying to help kids be kids as long as we can, because these days they're growing up so quick.
Mm-hmm.
They have so many technologies that are growing them up that we want to keep the kids as long as we can as a kid. And so we'd probably say, you know, try to keep it away from your children.
I think skeptics would probably obviously say, but at what point is too much? I mean, if everywhere we go, hey, warning, there might be something in this museum that, you know, you might find inappropriate, or you might find something. I mean, do you feel like the euphoric state of all that is warnings wherever we go, where we know exactly what it is so that we can make the choice,
I think that seems a little extreme. I think that what we have to do, and this is one of the issues, you know, when we talk about prevention, is it's one thing to screen and prevent people from seeing it, but it's probably better to teach kids, you know, from an early age, what pornography is, what they should avoid, why they should avoid it, so that when they see it, because they're going to see it. I mean, there's not a kid growing up today that isn't going to be exposed to some form of pornography or some magazine. And so having them understand not only, you know, what that is, also what that does to me, you know, and talking to them about it. You know, I would be more comfortable with my 3-year-old seeing that than my 13-year-old.
Right.
Probably.
Sure.
It's one of those things where, you know, when hormones are raging and you see that, it's different than a 3-year-old who probably sees his mother naked all the time.
Yeah. Right.
And so it's not a big deal because there's nothing wrong with the body. Mm-hmm. It's the context that the body's in.
Right.
You know, is it in a shelf at a rack or in a magazine? And so again, it's educating our children that there's nothing wrong with the human body. There's nothing wrong with sexual behavior. What's wrong is when you use it in the wrong way, and then it can create problems. And we talked to them about what type of problems.
So how do we do that? I mean, because certainly amongst the Mormons, this is a generalized statement, I understand. But, I mean, recently we had this issue with the sex ed bill, where it seems like a lot of people are pretty uncomfortable with talking about it. I would think that pornography would be something really difficult for a really conservative parent or parents to be like, well, there's images. Okay, so it's scantily clad. Okay,
don't do it.
Just don't do this. Yeah. If you're not supposed to be doing it.
If you like it, leave it alone.
Yeah.
So how do we do that? Because we spoke a couple weeks ago with a sex therapist who, you know, in the duration of the podcast where we visit with him, he's like, you know what, sex isn't a bad thing. But we talked about a lot of these women who, you know, they're, I guess we more focused on women, but also men who live their entire life until they're married. Sex is bad, sex is bad, sex is bad. You get married, sex is fine. And everyone goes,
I don't feel comfortable with this.
Yeah, this isn't right. So how would you teach a kid about?
I think it starts when they are 3, you know, when they're very young, is starting to talk to them about normal, you know, body maturation that occurs with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't do a very good job of that as families. The church doesn't do it. It's really not the church's responsibility. But I will say probably one of the best documents is the church's guide called A Parent's Guide. It's an older guide, so it's outdated.
Mm-hmm.
But the material in it is spot on because it starts at, you know, infancy,
mm-hmm.
and it goes right up to marriage, and it talks about everything. I mean, it uses the word masturbation. It talks about things that we just don't talk about in a normal church setting, but it does it in a clinical, you know, professional format.
So this is kind of off topic, but when you're talking about it with a young kid, do you recommend that people use correct terms for body parts? And
sure.
I mean, is that something that
will help? I think it's always good to use the correct terms. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
penis, vagina, masturbation.
Yeah. Hoo-ha is probably not that.
No, exactly.
You know, your special purpose. No.
Right. Yeah.
What is this?
I know a lot of LDS parents that have a problem with that, and they have a problem using the correct terms. And I think that gives people, it gives
shaming.
Children. Exactly.
Yeah, there's a shaming factor. If we don't talk about it in a normal way and say, yes, you have a penis or you have a vagina.
Right.
And that's okay. That's great. Even
God meant for you to have that.
When you say, oh, well, those are your private parts. Don't touch them. What do you mean private?
Private. Yeah.
You start to instill shame, which is one of the issues also we see with pornography. People that use pornography start to feel more and more shame, and then that fuels more pornography use. So it's kind of, I mean, if I had my way, obviously, and I don't know that it's correct, but I would try to teach it more from an early age on. And then I think when kids are exposed to it, they go, I know what that is. And that's, you know, it's kind of cool, but, you know.
Yeah.
So you mentioned something that I've never heard of, the Parents Guide?
It's called A Parents Guide, and it's a
like a manual you can get at church distribution?
You know, you can actually even download it
online
from the Gospel Library, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the Gospel Library on your phone, you
but
can
it's
download
a very
it.
Good, it's a very good guide, and I wish they would do a newer version, you know, with new pictures
mm-hmm.
and change some of the terminology and rewrite it, because it's an excellent manual basically for parents that want to know a little bit more and how to teach their kids. Because I think if we leave it up to the school system, you know, there's always going to be the controversy of what do you teach and how much versus, you know, here's something that you can use as parents in your home.
Sounds like a good thing for you to do, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Update that guide.
I've talked about it. I have talked about it.
So let's move in then to addiction. I think my wife is addicted. I there's been a few suspicious things. What are
some
warning signs that people can look for, either within themselves or within others?
Well, feel free, John, to jump in. I'll start.
You have all the experience.
There's a lot of things, but there's not any one thing that you would say, my husband is getting up in the middle of the night and I don't know where he's going. Oh, he's a porn addict. Now he may be.
He could just be hungry.
Right. That's one of the signs is, you know, is somebody, you know, getting up early and going off onto the computer alone, or are they getting up in the middle of the night and using the computer, or staying up late at night after everybody goes to bed and using the computer? That's one sign. Probably what you would see generally is a change in relationships. You know, I don't think I've ever had a couple that ends up coming in because there's a pornography problem, where usually, and I'll stereotype, the wife usually says something like, I knew something was wrong a year ago or 6 months ago, but I couldn't put my finger on it. But they'll start to notice a distancing in the relationship, mm-hmm. and things just aren't the same. Sometimes sexual behavior will change, which can go either way. I mean, mm-hmm. there can be an increase in desire and let's have more sex. There can also be a decrease where the person's not interested in sex because they're looking at pornography and masturbating, so they're not as interested in sex with their partner. Mm-hmm. Or there can be an introduction to, you know, maybe odd or just different sexual behaviors in the bedroom than that couple's been used to. And the wife's kind of like, where's this coming from?
Right.
And so those are, you know, some of the signs. There can also then be, you know, financial implications, you know, money that's spent, that where did it go?
Went out to eat.
So there's a lot of signs, and there's quite a few good books out now where they kind of list, you know, 10, 20, 30 different signs. But the caution there is, you know, don't just assume because you see one or two things, then you assume that's what it is, because there's been, you know, many cases where it's something entirely different.
Yeah, it's what I like to call the WebMD syndrome.
Right.
Where it's like,
diagnosing.
I'm dying of lung cancer.
I've got AIDS. No! And it's really just a common cold or something like that.
So if a wife or a husband is suspicious of their spouse, is it okay to go and look at the web history, or is that kind of sneaking? Is it better to just approach it?
I think it's okay either way. I think if you feel like, you know, something's up and you just approach that person, I might use the word confront that person, but not in a confrontational way. Approach them with love and kindness and say, hey, you know, I've noticed something. But there's certainly nothing wrong. I mean, it is your home. It is your computer. It mm-hmm. is your place and your personal space. So if, you know, you look at the history or something and you see something, then, you know, that's, I think, fine. Where I would caution is when there is a problem and it's a known problem, that the spouse, the non-using spouse, isn't the one that polices the other person's behavior and tries to monitor and check up and do all that. I think that just ends up creating more and more problems.
So what would you recommend? Say, you know, a relationship where the person is struggling with it and it's known between the two. How?
Get help. Professional help at that point. I think they need, you know, sometimes, you know, going to bishops or clergy can be helpful, mm-hmm. but often you may need professional help, at least to get not only the relationship part back on track, but to figure out how serious is this addiction and can you stop on your own.
So if someone wants to get help and they want to come to LDS Family Services, is it usually just one? Is it the person with the problem, the person without the problem, or do both?
It's usually both. I mean, often it's sometimes maybe the person with the problem first. You mm-hmm. know, maybe the wife says, you're going to go get some help, and they come in. But usually if I'm working with them, I'll bring them both in because I want to hear both sides. I want to find out what damage has been done to the relationship. And it's a problem that is better solved together than one person, because it has affected that relationship in a negative way. Not necessarily that it was anybody's fault. You know, it wasn't the wife's fault because she didn't want to have sex, which, you know, we hope we don't hear much, but occasionally we hear that.
Sure.
It really, I mean, pornography addiction really has nothing to do with sex any more than food addiction has anything to do with food. And so it's important to keep in mind that it's not really a sexual problem. It's just a problem that in this case involves sex.
And what if people feel like they can't afford to go and get help? They can't afford to go to counseling.
There's usually, I mean, if they're LDS, they can always talk to their bishop, and their bishop can make arrangements with LDS Family Services, and they can get counseling for free. And then there's others in the community that are willing to work with them. I think Richie mentioned, you know, there's a lot of STEP programs, like the 12-step addiction recovery programs mm-hmm. that the church has. In addition, there's the 12 steps of AA, mm-hmm. which works for a lot of different
addictions. But there's a PA, too. Isn't there 12 steps of PA?
Yeah, Then there's the addiction recovery program that the church kind of runs and sponsors, which is based on the 12 steps, but it incorporates Christ as opposed to just the higher power.
Right.
And it's run by missionaries and facilitators that have experience in dealing with this. And so those groups are free, and anybody can go to those, and those are very helpful.
Where would people find out about that stuff?
There's a website. It's at Provident Living, and then they just go under addiction recovery program there, and there's list of all the sites. There's meetings every day, throughout.
And they're
all
free.
All of the Salt Lake area, yeah, they're all free. And then throughout the world, we have meetings too.
So let's talk about prevention. They say an ounce of prevention, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
So let's talk about prevention.
Okay, let's talk. John, what do you got to say about
well,
that?
Well, and I was going to make mention about the person who is addicted. I think we need to look at them not as this bad person, but as someone who's struggling, someone who's addicted,
Good
someone
point.
Who's caught, someone who's like a drug addict. You don't feel like, oh, what a bad person. You feel like, oh, I feel so bad for that person because they're struggling. They can't get out of drugs. They can't get out of
porn. And let me just say one thing to that, because John triggered that. Is, you know, in our church even, you know, it would be okay to get up and say, hi, I'm Richie, and, you know, I'm a recovering alcoholic. And people would be like, good for you, you know. But if you got up and said, hi, I'm Ashley, and I'm a sex addict, they would probably be like, oh, a little bit shocked.
Yeah.
And so there is that stigma. And I like what John said, that we have to look at these individuals just like with any other problem, you know. And I don't see it as worse than anything else. It's just a behavior. And the way I put it to people is what they're doing is they're distancing themselves from God, and they're cutting themselves off from the relationships of the people that love them. And that's what we have to focus on and treat, not that person's got such a serious problem and they're messed up. They're just like us. They just, you know, fell into something that can really be crippling.
Well, sure. And I you know, going in that kind of same vein, I think people who are habitual liars can be, you know, just as bad.
Right.
I don't want to say bad, but, you know, it is equally
it's
a problem.
It's just as damaging. Right. It's as damaging to them and to the people in their lives.
Yeah. So prevention, let's get to that. What can we do?
And sorry, one last comment about checking your husband's computer or the history. You're concerned. It's not like I'm snooping on my husband.
Right.
You're concerned. You want the love of your life to be there for you, right?
Right.
To be there forever. So,
unless you are just snooping, in which case, knock it off.
Yeah.
But as far as prevention, you know, they say that one exposure of internet pornography can cause addiction. And so that's why, as Michael said, you know, it's best to talk to the children. This is what you're going to see. This is what a penis is. This is what a vagina is. This is what sex is. You're going to see it. You're going to make babies someday. This is a great thing. But you're going to see some things that you may not feel comfortable with when you get older that you're going to maybe want to talk to us about. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things, is to have communication with your children. So when they see something that they don't like or they are confused about, they come to you and say, I saw this on the playground and help me. I don't understand what it meant or why I felt this way.
Mm-hmm.
Or they know enough to go, oh, this is bad. I've had this conversation with my parents.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think along with that is that, you know, pornography is false. Pornography, what people see is not reality based. And so pornography is basically a lie and a distortion of sex and sexuality. And if people get their sex education from pornography, then they're going to have a very distorted view of what normal, you know, healthy sexual relationships are like.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I think one of the ways to prevent is to start young, again, talking to them about what healthy sexual relationships are like and what healthy sexuality is, and that it's nothing to be ashamed of, that we all experience it, but there's a time and a place. And that's really the key. And so I think with prevention, it's starting early.
What else? We have an open line of communication with our kids, with each other, with our spouse. Open communication.
And I think the birds and the bees talk is not just a one time, you know, when you're 8 or 9, you have it with your parents and you're done. It's every month. It's every time you need to. You really need to get into your kids' heads because they're being attacked from all over the place.
Right.
And I think, too, along with that, it's okay to be vigilant, you know, to be a little snoopy when it comes to your kids. You know, I don't think it's a good idea for kids to have computers in their bedroom or smartphones that have internet access, unlimited, those kinds of things. And so I think as parents, we have to be wise consumers and make sure that we're doing everything we can to monitor to some degree what our kids can be exposed to.
So a computer in a main room.
Yeah, computer in a main room.
And not necessarily smartphones for kids.
With internet access.
Yeah,
internet access.
And then even in home computers, you know, with limited internet access, where there's either some filtering on the system or, you know, monitoring at least so that parents are aware who's on it when. And maybe that everybody has their own separate account so they can see, okay, John.
Oh, it was Johnny that looked at that. It wasn't me. It was John.
And that's important because sometimes people get accused when it wasn't the person.
Right.
You know? Sure.
So. And even with that, I mean, even if you monitor it, kids can pull up a Disney character or something for school, and boom, comes up pornography. About 70% of the exposure comes when you're looking for schoolwork, is what they've shown.
Wow.
And so it's not like it's, I'm looking up something bad that I think I'm going to look for porn. It's coming after them. I'm looking up Disney characters or other things,
bologna
and it's just right there.
What is
and it's
this?
Just right there. I mean, I'm looking at melons. I'm trying to shop for melons, right?
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
It's like things that they try to, cause if you look even at some of the images out there, if you look up a certain topic, you'll see inappropriate things somewhere down on those pages.
Right.
You'll see something like,
that
has
nothing
to do with what I just searched for.
Right.
I don't get to get it.
Right.
But the pornographers know that, so they're trying to get you. So just be very careful.
Yeah.
So addiction. I'm listening to this podcast. I'm an addicted person. I feel like, okay, maybe I'm not addicted, but it takes a good chunk of my life, a lot of my time. What can I do?
First thing I think is admit just that to yourself, that I have a problem. You know, that it's kind of like that first step in the 12-step program is admitting that we of ourselves are powerless to overcome this alone. And so it requires the help of someone else. That someone, you know, can be a parent, it can be a friend, it can be, you know, a spouse, it could be a bishop. Certainly the Savior needs to be in that mix. Mm-hmm. And if they'll make that first step and admit, I've got a problem, I've tried to stop, you know, 5 times, 10 times, 100 times, and I can't. Then, you know, that's the biggest step, making that admission to themselves that I've got a problem and I need help to deal with it. I can't do it on my own.
Okay.
And then from there, it's really fairly easy.
I've got a problem. Now what? I am addicted. Now what? What's my next
now
thing?
You would either talk to someone. Mm-hmm. You would maybe go attend a 12-step group.
Okay.
You might get a counselor. Mm-hmm. Those would all be great places to start. And any one of those places would probably lead you to the other place. So if you went and talked to a bishop, he's probably going to say, let's get you to see a counselor that specializes in this. If you saw a counselor, they're going to say, well, let's get you to one of the groups as well as coming in and seeing me. And so they kind of work in tandem.
I'm embarrassed, though, because of my church calling or something like that. Then what?
And that's a problem. I think that's why, you know, it is kind of the invisible problem in the church.
Right.
You know, it doesn't smell.
Huge
it's not like
stigma.
You're smoking or drinking. And so, you know, people can be looking at pornography and, you know, and getting away with it because it's they think, well, it's only hurting me.
Right.
And so there's that first step in admitting that they can't do it alone. You have to swallow that pride and say, I may have to face embarrassment and talking to somebody, but if I want to get better, that's a step I have to take.
Mm-hmm.
And I've, you know, and people will be understanding. It's like John said, most people want to help, you know, even spouses, you know, even though their hearts are broken, they are still, hey, I'm here to help you.
What do you find most common to be the reaction of the spouse? And then what would you say to a spouse? Because I know that, like in the conversation that I've had with my wife, she likes to tell me very straightforward how she feels on most things.
Yeah.
And she said, listen, if I find you looking at pornography, I consider that to be cheating.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, oh, you were just looking at it. I consider that to be cheating on me and our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So don't.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, so if I were, I still want to be married to her and, you know, everything
what
like that.
What I find is it always goes better if the person who's using goes to the spouse and tells them.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than being caught. If
right.
you're caught, then, you know, it's more of a trust issue. I mean, it's still going to be ugly if you go and confess to your partner,
sure.
but it's not as ugly as getting caught.
What is this? No.
Right. And then there's usually a path of lies. You know, well, I only looked at it, you know, a couple times. And, you know, I mean, it's best to just say, I've got a problem. Here's what it is. And I want to get over it. You know, will you help me? And
mm-hmm.
and my experience has been, you know, 99% the spouse will say yes. I mean, most spouses love their husbands or their wives. I mean, it can go either way. And they want that relationship to work. And so they are willing to work through it with them, you know, if they'll just be honest. And that's the main damage with pornography is that there's so much trust that's been destroyed
right.
and damaged and dishonesty that's what it takes time to repair. Even long after the pornography's gone, then there's still that trust issue. And that just takes time.
Is it possible? Because where it's like cheating, I know they say you never really get back to where it was before the person cheated. Like speaking in this case of adultery, but with pornography, do you believe it's possible for?
I do, and not only possible, but I think generally relationships are better once it's out in the open and people are in recovery. Because when they're using, there's something wrong with that relationship during that time because of that person's behavior. So when that behavior is gone and they're connecting and they're reuniting, then, you know, the wife's going, man, our relationship's better than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. It's because there's honesty and trust and they're, you know, relying on each other. So, yeah, it absolutely can be as good as before or even better.
So, okay, so we admit we have a problem, then we go see someone, we involve a spouse, a friend. What if we're those people, we're trying to support a friend, you know, trying to overcome porn mm-hmm. addiction?
Or the spouse.
Yeah, or the spouse. What kind of words of advice would you have for that?
I think probably just encouragement, you know, just being a good listener, letting that person know that you still love them, you still care about them, that it hasn't changed how you feel about them, and that you maybe even just asking, what can I do to help? Mm-hmm. You know, something like that.
Non-judgmental, obviously, is key.
Yeah.
Which is probably really hard.
It is hard, especially for loved ones, you know, especially for a spouse that finds out. It's hard to be non-judgmental when your heart's broken and you're just in so much pain.
Well, and I think it's a lot of that thing, you know, I think that maybe my wife is right. Don't tell her I said that.
But she'll listen.
I know. But, you know, where it's the what was missing? What's wrong with me that you needed to go to this extent to do this?
I'm glad you brought that up, Richie, because it takes me a lot of time to convince spouses that it's not them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen beautiful women married to great guys, you know, and the guy's using porn, and then the wife's like, well, what's wrong with me?
Right.
And I try to help them see that it has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with sex even. And it takes a while to get them to really see that. But eventually they will. They'll come to realize that it's not them. It's not physical. It's more the emotional stuff that this person was using the pornography for.
So right. can it be, though, then emotional things that are missing in a relationship, though, right?
It could be. I mean, you know, you have to kind of look at all of those. But I would never say to a couple, well, there's something wrong here, and that's why you started looking at porn.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You
okay. know,
and lay any of the blame at the foot of the other partner. Because there may be something, but again, it's your responsibility to say, honey, there's something wrong in our relationship. You know, I would like you to be more close to me. I would like more intimacy. I would like this or that, or, you know.
Yeah, it's the old thing that no one ever makes you do anything.
Yeah.
You know, you have the choice to do
right.
it. And,
right.
And if you didn't discuss it with the person, you can't say, well, you made
it's your
me.
Fault.
No, no.
Yeah.
Clearly, that person didn't make you do it. Right. You have that own agency.
I think it's also like when you're depressed or tired or whatever, you try to find something that gets you out of that slump. Mm-hmm. Whether you're depressed, you go jogging. If you're tired, you take a nap. Mm-hmm. When I was, a long time ago, I'll fess up to this. When I was working first, I was working early hours to late hours. I would have a Victoria's Secret magazine in my file. Mm-hmm. I'd look at it, wake me up, put it away, go back to work. So I think you can use porn for anything as a solution.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You can use anything really, but I think porn is the
And that it is kind of similar in that way to a drug for some people, that it creates a physiological change, and that change might be enough to kind of, you know, wake you up or stimulate you or get you out of your depression, but it's always temporary. It doesn't really solve the problem. It's a temporary fix, you know, to a problem that maybe you need to eat better or exercise more mm-hmm. or talk about your problems, heaven forbid.
No, we can't do that. That won't work.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot, and it seems like and with the porn issue that we always seem to lean more towards men.
Yeah.
Men are the ones that have the issue. Men are the ones that, you know, they – what is it, statistically speaking, about between men and women who
– it's hard to say for sure, but I think it's like 70-30, something like that.
Do you think it is because a lot of women just won't admit it?
I think it's somewhat, but I think it's partly more that women just aren't wired that way.
Okay.
Women, you know, some women, I mean, I shouldn't say women in general, but most women can look at, you know, a naked person and it's not as arousing for them as it is for a man to look at a naked mm-hmm. woman. Yeah. I mean, it's just...
they're man looks at a woman, woo!
Yeah.
Woo! woman, she can stand to lose
that's
a few
right.
pounds. What? Woo!
Yeah. So I do think that there is just some physiological difference that sort of slants it. But we are seeing more women, unfortunately, you know, getting into pornography And even more pornography that is being actually designed for women, you know, mm-hmm. and it's a campaign out there in the pornography industry, as John said, to get more business. And so they're writing more storyline to the pornography instead of just, you know, pictures of naked women. Sure. It's more a relationship kind of focused porn. Right. And then that will capture women. That's probably why more women read romance novels than men do.
Yeah.
You know? You get to know the pizza delivery boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, I want to know about what a nice guy he is. Okay, sure.
He has a puppy.
Oh, yes, he does. Now I'll enjoy this. I also want to talk about this, mainly because I've heard both sides of the actual physical change within the human brain with pornography.
Yeah. What do you want?
Let's go. Where some people have said, yes, absolutely, there is proof that there is a physical change
in the brain
that occurs with pornography. And other people have said, you are so full of it, quit trying to apply
I would say is we don't know, scientifically, we don't know exactly what really is happening yet. But there's some compelling research that's coming out that is showing that it does create changes in the brain. Now, obviously, I mean, if I were to look at pornography right now and I was hooked up to machines, there would be some changes physiologically in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those would originate and start in the brain. So based on that, you would have to say, well, it's doing something to your brain.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. What we don't know is the long-term effects. I mean, we can measure that with meth and cocaine and other things.
Right.
And it's probably too much to just jump and say, well, these do this, so then pornography would do it too because they act in similar ways. But that's where the research is going. We're looking into that, and it's looking like, you know, there probably is things that go on in the brain very similar to certain drugs.
There's a couple of things that I've seen pictures of a healthy brain and then a brain on porn, black and dead. I mean, it looks like kind of the smoker and the non-smoker, the lung, sure. healthy lung and the dead lung. And as far as what it does to you chemically or physiologically, there's a group out there called the Lighted Candle Society. They're doing a lot, like you said, there's a lot of research going on to try to prove that it is a drug. We need to regulate it like a drug, and you need to cater it like a drug. You be careful of what you're doing. Probably the one thing that drugs do is you can get away from it, right? You can stay away from the porn addicts. You can stay away from bad neighborhoods.
Sure.
But with porn, I mean, your mind is such an amazing mind. It's in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. It could come out with a smell. It could come out with you see the ocean, and it pops back in there. Those images are in there, and they could come back at any time. So that's probably the most dangerous thing about it is porn could just pop up any time in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll have to forgive me, but as you were talking about that, I kind of, my mind went to the old commercial from the 80s. This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think of something that they could put in a pan that would be, this is your brain on porn.
Yeah.
I couldn't get anything.
The problem with most of those is they didn't work. Those weren't effective
campaigns.
And so I think it's the same with pornography.
People are like, ooh, fried eggs. I mean, I love fried eggs.
Yeah. Even if it does, you know, change our brain and we prove that, it isn't going to make people not look at porn.
Right, because
it still does what it does, and it's just, I mean, if we were going to go after any drug, we'd go after alcohol. I mean, it causes more death and smoking, and you know, we'd go after alcohol and tobacco and try to outlaw and eliminate those. But that's not going to happen. It's probably not going to happen with porn. We can regulate mm-hmm. We can follow the obscenity laws, but we can't probably get rid of pornography. But I think through education, that's how we're going to keep people from hopefully becoming addicted and creating problems.
And I think the adult thing, too, if I'm 18, I have, you know, full right to look at pornography. That's my right as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
As children, that's what we're trying to focus on, is keeping the children as protected as we can because they have no rights.
Right. Right?
We can help them to grow up. Adults, we have no right to tell them what to do. But children, at least we have the right to try to help them grow up a little bit better.
Right. Sure. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say thank you. You brought us this cool. This is from the Clean Services Foundation. We'll put a picture of this on with this website. With the post on the website, but we're clean team number 504. Check that out.
Nice. All right.
Joining the ranks of such other people as Senator Orrin Hatch, Senator Mike Lee, Zions Bank.
And let's talk about where you can find the members of the clean team. If you go to
cleanservicesfoundation.org, and then you go into resources, and then clean services info, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been updated for about a month. We're getting people joining every day almost.
That's great.
Kenya, Israel, Bangladesh, just today. And so people are understanding that this is a global problem. Let's band together. I mean, the pornographers do it, right? They do it better than anybody. They work together better than anybody. That's probably one thing we could probably learn from them is how to work together better. So that's what we're trying to do is get everybody together.
There we go.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, I want to ask you guys two other questions. One, what is your favorite thing about your faith individually?
I think for me, it's truth. It's knowing for a surety of certain truths that I can't find and had never found anywhere else.
Okay.
I have been quite a jerk in my life, and I think I'm trying to be less of a jerk. I think forgiveness is probably the biggest thing that I like about our faith is forgiveness.
So. Cool. And then lastly, we asked people to climb up on the Rammy Umptum. We did this at the beginning of the episode and telling people where we can get it, but give out websites, Facebook pages, books, anything that you would recommend for someone that is struggling. Just go ahead and hit us with them.
Okay, well, let me just I'll give you the official church ones. So okay. There's combatingpornography.org. That's the church combating pornography website. And then if you go to LDS.org and then go onto the Provident Living section, there's some information there on the addiction recovery program and some more on pornography there. So I would recommend those sites.
Okay.
Fight the New Drug is a good one. CleanServicesFoundation.org. Citizens for Families or strengthenthefamily.net, pornharms.com, morality and media. There's a lot of people that we want to work together. So anything, you know, send us an email and we'll get you resources if you need. We'll come to your school. We'll come to a parent group meeting, church meeting. Just because I think the big thing is to just start talking about this because it's not going to go away. So we need to start talking about
Facebook
it.
Or Twitter? Is there any Facebook pages for?
For youth, there's a good site. It's called Voices for Virtue. And they have a Facebook page. That's kind of their main method, and it's geared towards young adults and children. Not children, but like 12 and up. And they've got a great page and links to a lot of other stuff, too.
Okay.
Voices for Virtue.
Okay.
They're a Clean Team member, of course, too.
Okay.
There
you go.
They're going to chat.
At My Clean Services is one to follow.
Okay.
And then I did one called At John the Utahn, which kind of talks about all the partners and everything. So those two.
J-O-N.
At J-O-H-N, theutahn.com. Yeah, and then if possible, if you can follow at School Tip Line, if you do that, they will actually put in their technology to help anonymous texting. So students can actually text in, I saw guns, I saw porn, I saw a fight to the school. They'll do it for free if you can get over 1,000 Twitter followers at School Tip Line.
School.
Okay.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, we hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And when the time comes, you will travel home safely.
And if you were not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row of the cultural hall.